All right. Just give me 3 minutes. I'll start in 3 minutes. I have to put some pants on first.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh, that's better.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I think I screwed that up, didn't I?
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to the program. That is my name. Don't wear it out like some type of a dish rag. How you doing? Happy holidays to you, huh? Isn't that fantastic, huh? We're still in the midst of this this Christmas Hanukkah thing, and this was weird yesterday. This was weird. I received a gift from one of my people. I have people, not a lot of people, but I've got people who help me out with this this program and that kind of stuff. I have some people. One of the people gave me a very, very nice holiday gift. And I'll tell you what it is and how it occurred and why I'm telling you about it, because it bothers me, because I am a person that gets bothered by the slightest stupid things. And I admit it. And I think when you have a problem, half of the problem is gone when you admit it. The other half, the actual problem, that stays with you for your life. But I admit that I have these little quirky problems. Well, they're big quirky problems is what they are. So this guy, who is younger than I am, and I don't know why I said that, because a lot of the world is now. This guy, he's one of my people. He does stuff for me on this show. He helps organize and do things behind the scenes. There are actually people behind the scenes of this program. A lot of people don't realize that. Ron, what do? You dress yourself? No, I have people dress me. What, are you kidding me? You think I put my pants on like everybody else? No way. I put them on over my head. Seriously? I have people. So this kid, he says, Ron, I have something for you for the holidays. And by the way, Ron, is it Hanukkah for you or is it Christmas? I said, that's personal stuff, because I don't wear my religious on my sleeve, which would be silly because my sleeves would look stupid. So it's none of your business, you fucking asshole. So no, I didn't say that. And he didn't ask. He did say, is it Hanukkah or is it Christmas? And I knew we're off to a bad start because, my God, we're all in one world and we don't segregate ourselves based on religion. So this little Catholic schmuck, he gives me this present, nicely wrapped, like, obviously he didn't wrap it. Guys don't know how to wrap, and I'm not talking about, hey, I went down to the store and the cops came over, not that kind of wrap. I'm talking about putting paper on top of boxes and maybe a nice little bow. Guys very rarely know how to do that. They take a big sheet of paper and they put the gift in the center of the box, and then they just somehow get it connected with some scotch tape and they throw a card on it. And that's really all guys do. And even that they don't do well, but it's not neatly wrapped ever. like professionally. And somehow, and I'm not being sexist here, I'm really not being sexist, but women rap a lot better than men do. And that's just a fact. It's like vagina and penis. You cannot, that's just the way it is. That's my explanation of the differences between the sexes, ladies and gentlemen. Vagina, penis, that's just the way it is. Okay, fine. And I guess that's true in many senses. So the kid gives me this gift, and it's a good size box. And I open the thing up very, very carefully. When someone gives you something so nicely wrapped, you don't know what to do with it. If a guy wraps it up and it's all messed up and stuff like that, you don't mind eating into the paper and unwrapping it. But if it's nicely wrapped, you have to say stupid stuff like, oh, the wrapping's so beautiful, I don't want to touch it. You know, stupid stuff like that, because of course you don't care about the stupid paper, but somebody went to the trouble of making it so nice and neat that you don't really, you know, you don't want to touch the damn thing. You know, you want to get an x-ray machine and just see what's inside, and we'll just leave it wrapped for the rest of my life because it is such a beautiful wrapping job. As a matter of fact, the wrapping job is probably better than what's inside the box, I'm guessing, all the time. So I tear into this thing. It's nicely wrapped. This guy's girlfriend probably did it for him or something. And, oh, man, somebody spent some time on me. Oh, my God. I can't even bother to get the dirt out of my nails, you know, but yet someone has spent the time to actually wrap a gift for me. Oh, that's where the thought is. So I open up the box, and there's a box, and I open it up, and inside is this golden microphone. Now, it's not really made of gold. I doubt it greatly. I don't think they went to South Africa, went into the deepest mines of diamond mines and came out with a golden microphone. I think it's like cheap, you know, it's just gold-colored microphone is what it was. But it was the old-style microphone and very, very cool-looking and very, very nice. And I was touched by it because not only was that a gift that somebody actually spent some money on me, whoa, because I even spent on myself. But that was the thought that, and but to say, Ron, you know, you do the radio, here's a gift, it's a little golden microphone, you put it on your desk, and I thought, wow, you know, that actually shows some a thought process involved. And then I'm thinking, did you pick this out for me, or did your girlfriend pick this out for me, or what? But thank you so much. And I said verbally, here's the kicker, ladies and gentlemen. I said verbally to him, I said, thank you so much for this gift. It's really, really cool. And he says to me, no problem. Whoa, that stopped me. That's why my mind is so messed up, because I couldn't let that go. When you say to somebody, thank you for the gift, the proper response is, you're welcome. Not you are welcome, because that's too long and drawn out and too orchestrated. You're, Y-O-U, apostrophe R-E, you're welcome. And you put a little smile on your face just to make it pretty. You don't say, no problem. That was such an odd response. And then I started realizing that's a generational thing. That's the way the people younger than myself respond instead of saying, you're welcome. They say, no problem. Like, you didn't really, it wasn't a, don't worry about it, it wasn't a problem. And sometimes they'll say, no worries, no worries. What the hell, what does that mean? No worries? So you did something for me, I'm thanking you, and your response is, you didn't put me out that much, or if you did, don't worry about it. It's okay, I got it covered. I mean, you know, yeah, it was a hassle to go get the gift and have somebody wrap it for me, and thanks for the gift. No problem, it wasn't a problem. It wasn't a big problem for me. It wasn't any problem, really. I'm just looking at it as the fact that it could have been a big problem, but in your case, it wasn't one, really. To give you something from my heart on this Christmas Hanukkah occasion was not really a problem for me. I mean, Had it been, you know, a different time of year, this would have been a real problem. And this probably would not have happened. But it was no problem, okay? I mean, it's not that you're welcome. It's just that it wasn't a big deal for me. It didn't like stop me in my tracks or anything. I didn't have to cancel appointments and things like that. It wasn't a problem of any sort. I just want you to know that my gift giving to you was not really a problem. I mean, per se, it was, I'm not saying it was a delight. It was a pleasure. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm not saying you're welcome. I'm just telling you that this entire situation of me giving you something was not really a problem. It could have been a problem. Don't get me wrong, but it wasn't really a problem. Oh, okay. Well, thank you anyway. No problem. No worries. There are no worries to be had. Don't you worry about the fact that I gave you a gift, you opened it up, and you showed your appreciation. Don't worry about that. I wasn't worried about it. No, there are no worries. There are no worries. There are no worries involved here. There's no tension. There are no problems. I just want to get that straight from the beginning. This was not a trauma for me. Just want you to know, me giving you a gift was not a trauma. I didn't have to go to the hospital for any type of insertion of an IV or anything like that. My car didn't break down, and could you cause an entire accident because of my shopping for a gift for you? There was not a problem involved. Please do not worry about this. Please, oh my God, don't worry. Please don't worry about this. If you're going to worry about something, worry about your health or your relationship with your significant other. Don't worry about, oh my God, please don't worry about the fact that I gave you this wonderful gift. There are no worries, no problems. It's okay. Everything's fine. No worries, no problems. Everything's good. Whew. Wow. I'm seriously, it's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Everything's good. Whew. Whew. No worries.
You want to talk about a guy who's got his mojo working? It's this guy right here, Ron Van Dam. That's why they named the show after him. 100% Mojo, Mojo, Mojo.
No worries here. Do I look worried? No worries. Do I look worried? Try that line when you're giving your girlfriend. Let's say you're a guy. Let's make believe you're a guy just for a minute, okay? And you're giving your girlfriend an engagement ring. And you get down on your knees or one knee, depending on how many knees you have. And you take out this little velvet box or whatever the box is made of, and you open up the box, and it's a 50 carat gold diamond thing, and a ring, a beautiful, oh, it's sparkling like nothing. It's catching the sun rays and baking your iris. It's just so beautifully shiny and perfect, and you open up, and there it is, and she looks at it, and she goes, she can't speak. Oh my God. Oh my God. This is the most beautiful. Oh my God. I can't wait to show. Oh my God. You are so incredible. Oh.
Will you marry me?
Are you kidding me? Yes. Oh, no one's ever given me anything like this.
Well, it's because I love you.
Oh, yes, I will marry you. You are, oh my God, you're amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
No problem, no worries.
What?
I've said no problem. It wasn't a problem, not a big problem for me.
No problem.
Yeah, well, no worries. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about the fact that I gave this to you, and there are no worries involved here.
Why would I worry? You just gave me a beautiful moment in my life. I've been waiting all my life for this. Why would I worry?
Oh, well, it's not a problem. It wasn't a problem. I mean, I had to go down to the jewelers and speak to these people, and they were trying to sell me all these different things. And, yeah, I took about, like, 2 hours off of work to do this because I was downtown near the jewelers. But it wasn't a problem. It wasn't a problem. It's not like I didn't have lunch or anything. I'd grabbed a sandwich. I mean, I didn't sit down and have a full meal for lunch like I like to with the guys. But it wasn't a problem. I mean, I can be with the guys anytime. It's not a big problem, really. And speaking to the jeweler, I mean, I don't know what I'm doing with... I had to listen to them and decipher whether they were trying to take me or whether it was, you know, really a good deal. I have no idea, really. And I was going to bring somebody, but I didn't. So it wasn't a real problem, per se, you know, picking the ring out. I mean, there were some hassles involved and some extra things to do. And I had to think about it and stuff. But it wasn't a problem, really. Not... greatly. Well, the Uber ride was pretty expensive. I think the guy kind of took me and charged me a little more than he had to, and that might have been the only problem involved. But no worries. Don't worry. Don't stay up all night worrying about me going down and getting you a ring, my God. Is that... Don't ever worry about that.
You know, on second thought, I don't know if I want to marry you.
What?
Yeah, you're kind of an asshole, and I don't really, thinking about it, I just maybe don't want to marry you now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it's not a problem. There are no worries.
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender, but I hung up my boxing gloves recently and put on my chef's hat to open my brand new restaurant.
It's Headshots, Bobby.
Headshots. Headshots serve some of the best Italian crayons.
That's cuisine.
Italian cuisine in the area. You come in and I'll give you a meal that'll knock you out. Ah, crayons.
That one says meatballs, Bobby.
Meatballs are the best you've ever tasted. Come in for my 1-2 punch pasta and daily lunch specials. Every day, daily lunch specials are every day.
We're all good on that one, Bobby. Let's keep going.
All right. So listen, come into...
It's called Headshots, Bobby. Headshots.
Headshots, thank you. Headshots, and ask for me. What the hell is my name?
Headshots is located downtown at the corner of Flange and Hassenpfeffer. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner if Bobby remembers the keys and where the restaurant is.
Adorable. Adorable. Good cuisine, though, man. Good cuisine. I'm happy to tell you about this place. No problem. No worries. Well, people do worry about something, though, around the holidays, especially after the holidays, and that's all the money that they spent on all these people that they didn't really care for, but it's just something you should do. You have to get them something. I've got to get them something. And then the credit card bill comes in the next month, or you look at your checking account or wherever you got this crazy money from that you thought you had, you realize, well, I don't really have it. I forgot I've got a mortgage, I've got a rent, I've got a car payment, I didn't really have the money to begin with. What the hell, it was the holidays, I got drunk. All of a sudden I started liking people when usually I don't. Especially those people, yet I had to get them a gift and I really, at the time, wanted to. Now I'm regretting it because I don't really like them. But it was the holidays, so I had to do it, because that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to do these things. And then you say to yourself, oh my goodness, I didn't have the money for this. So this is a time of year after the fact. It's like waking up from a drunken stupor. Oh my God, I have a headache. This is the same thing. Oh my God, I have no money. So let's talk about the financial realities of life. Kevin Kelly is Bank of America's Managing Director of Merrill Edge and Financial Center Sales. And we're talking about the financial realities redefining adulthood for young people in the Boston area and all over the country, actually. And as these young adults grow up in this generation, they're facing different problems than other generations faced with their financial concerns.
It is. It's the Bank of America and USA Today commissioned a joint survey of over 2,000 young Americans ages 18 to 26, Ron. Mm-hmm. And we found some really interesting things out of this. I'd say the first thing is that having experienced the Great Recession during their formative years while they were in school has really shaped their values and what they're looking at from a financial independence standpoint. So many of the surveyed young adults take a look at financial or adulthood yes. is defined as financial independence rather than traditional, perhaps age-based points, such as turning 18 or 21 or even getting married.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Did you refer to was that the Great Depression in 2008? Is that what we're calling it?
Well, no, I'd call this the Great Recession.
Okay.
However,
it could have been. It was close.
It's interesting that the generations back then are shaped much like they are today.
Yeah,
it's cyclical.
Yeah, it's financial hardship nationwide is the same thing, you know, depending on if you didn't live through both, then you don't know the difference. Is there more concern about finances now from this Generation Z?
There are some concerns amongst these millennials and the oldest of Generation Z is what we're calling them from 18 to 21 years old. And the concerns are that perhaps they didn't get as much of a financial education through high school or, in some cases, college that they feel they need to be successful and, again, become an adult in their eyes.
Yeah. Although, as we sit here now talking at this very moment, the financial world is doing quite well. Does this generation not feel like they're a part of that situation as we sit now?
They do. They feel very optimistic about the economy, about perhaps the future and where the country is going. But what they are very conscientious of is how they're going to make their way.
Yeah.
So they saw that the calamity really from about 8 to 9 years ago, and they saw that there was sound financial planning that got us out of it. So that's why we've created with Khan Academy Better Money Habits.
Yeah.
It's a self-source resource that they can use, and that really connects with what they're looking to do. So they are optimistic, but they know that they want more education, and they're willing to plan.
Yeah, I think it's also like an old school problem where you just have to just get up off your behind and do something about it. There are tons of financial advisors and tons of different routes to take, but you have to take one of them. And that's, right. I mean, that's the same as any generation. It's somehow the motivation to actually do something about it.
It is. And there are some slight differences there. I have a daughter that's 20 years old in college in Boston, and it's very expensive. She's very aware of finances, more so than perhaps I was of a different generation, because especially in Boston, such a big college town and such an expensive college town, there's a lot of debt that students are carrying. And so they can go and see an advisor, but a lot of them want to do it on their own. They want to get started. A lot of them rely on their parents. My daughter relies on me, but I also steer her towards Better Money Habits because she gets a good base, and then we have good conversations from there.
Yeah, I think we all had a reliance on our parents. And I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I think we're probably from the same generation. I don't know. That's a similar reliance, but then there comes a point when you are off on your own, and then you do have to take your own routes. But usually the parents advise them where to go for that kind of thing.
They do, and they have, and the survey reveals that as well. There's a lot of them, and again, it's a good thing, as I think we've pointed out here. A lot of them are relying on them still, so if they're not feeling that they've reached that adulthood by that financial measure, they're still relying on their parents and perhaps living with them, and that's not a bad thing as long as they're saving.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about saving is the good majority from the survey are saving. However, only about a quarter of them are saving in a 401k, for an example. So they may not be saving in the best way.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one difference between when I was growing up and where it's at now is we used to have savings accounts, that's what they were called, and money markets that yielded a decent percentage where if you didn't touch it, you'd be pretty well off in your later adult years, or even in your mid-adult years. But that doesn't really exist anymore, I don't think. I mean, not right now.
Well, yeah, the rates are different than they were.
Oh, yeah.
And the way forward now is different as well. And that's why attending these resources and taking a look at how to manage your savings and budgeting is so important today.
Yeah, because I think a lot of adults, even from prior generations, they don't even know how to handle an economy where there really are no savings accounts other than investment accounts. It's difficult. But that's where we need people like yourself to help us maneuver through this. So where do we go for more information?
Well, you can go to bettermoneyhabits.com. It's a joint site in partnership with Khan Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So the information is well laid out there.
Perfect. Thank you for your time today, and we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
Take care, Kevin.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Raise your hand if you're ready for more of the Ron Van Dam Show. Wow. I have never seen so many fucking masochists in one place in my life.
Listening to the Big Show by Ron Van Dam.
It's big.
I wish I could listen to it too.
Can't.
But sometimes he says bad words.
I didn't say it. I didn't say the bad word. I didn't say that. The bad word was in the. No, it wasn't me that said that. You know what's fun to do every once in a while? Here's what my father used to do, and please don't do this. On a Sunday, when my father had nothing to do, he'd get us all piled into the car, and he'd make believe that we were going to move. And maybe we were. Maybe I was just too young to know whether he actually had plans for us to move or not, but we were living in a house. And on a Sunday, here and there, you put us in the car, and we go looking at houses. And these real estate agents would have these. We go to open houses. Where, you know, so you weren't bothering the real estate agent. It was an open house anyway. You know, the house was open. You didn't have to call the agent and say, I want to see the house. I'm not going to buy anything. I just want to entertain the kids because they won't shut up. It wasn't like that. The house was open anyway, and the agent was sitting there anyway, drinking coffee, wondering when the next person is going to come into the house. And I'm sure that the only people that they want really going through the house are interesting buyers or interested. We weren't interesting. We were interested. And we go tromping through these houses and look at all the houses that apparently we weren't not going to live in because my father, I don't think, was serious about moving. That's just the side that has nothing to do with anything, by the way. So anyway, but it's interesting sometimes. Did you ever go to the house that you used to live in when you were growing up or the apartment that you were in when you were growing up and you go back and you see it? What's the first reaction you have if you can get into the house and actually see the room that you were brought up in and it's been like 20 years since you've been there or 30 or even more? It's a trip, man. It's a trip down memory lane. It blows your mind. And what's the first thing you say to yourself when you walk into the room, your bedroom, where you were brought up as a kid? And you haven't seen it in decades and decades. What's the first thing you say? We all say the same thing, right? No problem. No, that's not it. We all say, well, this looks smaller than it actually was. It always looks smaller than it actually was. Everything looks smaller than it actually was. That's how women remember their first sexual experience with their first guy. That was smaller. Now it looks smaller than it actually was. The good people at Trulia.com are not suggesting that you waste their time, but they are saying every once in a while, check the houses in your neighborhood and see like how your house compares and stuff. It's interesting to do that. And with the Trulia website, you can do that kind of thing. And it's kind of fun to do. And especially if you're moving, they give you all the information you could possibly need. We're going to speak to them right now.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, Ralph. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm well so far. Ralph McLaughlin joins us now. He's with Trulia, which we all know that site, Trulia.com. And, of course, that deals with your abode and that fine world of that. And we're looking at the 2017 housing market, how that's going to shape up. We know things are getting a little bit better all over the place. Is 2017 indeed looking good?
You know, we think 2017 is going to look healthy, but again, it depends on where you are in the country. You know, we've really got kind of three findings from our work on what we think is going to happen in 2017. One, we think house price growth in markets that we're calling the bargain belt, which is primarily in the Midwest and South, we're actually going to catch up with the costly coast. Mm-hmm. You know, that includes places like Boston, New York, and the West Coast. Two, we think inventory shortage may break in some markets, but it may not necessarily help prices, especially if, President-elect Trump, loosens mortgage, like he's been talking about, you know, which could boost demand. And three, rates, we think they may rise a little bit. Mortgage rates might go up to 4.5, 4.6, 4.7%, mm-hmm. but it really isn't going to impact home buying unless you're really in places like San Francisco, New York, or Honolulu. So those are the three main findings that we're looking forward to in 2017.
So you're saying the more expensive the home, the more that would impact the mortgage payments would be considerably more in a considerably more expensive home.
Yes, and it's also, you know, depending on how prices relate to rents. So if rents and prices on a per month basis are about the same, you know, actually renting may look like a better option. And in fact, mortgage rates would only have to be about 5.5% in places like, you know, New York or San Francisco or Honolulu for the cost of renting to be the same as the cost of owning.
Yeah, so, that's interesting.
Home buyers there may be a little torn between renting a house and buying a house.
Right.
The rest of the country, it'd only have to be, mortgage rates have to be between 7 and 10%. So we really don't think it's going to matter much there.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I know the price of my home, and I'm in the Boston area, has increased. I mean, I'm not selling, but the value has gone up, and I've been waiting 10 years for that to happen.
Yeah. and the difficult thing is, you know, if you've owned your home for 10 years and prices have gone up, you know, it's going to make it more expensive if you do want to sell and buy another house.
True.
Right? I'm not sure what your mortgage rate is, but you may be more likely to kind of stay put and maybe renovate. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're seeing inventory shortages in some markets, especially in costly ones like Boston, just because the alternative to moving is more expensive.
Well, you know, there's so many shows on television about renovating your home now. That that starts filtering into one's mind. Like now you've got a decision to make. Whereas before it was, we just move when we want to do that. We move. We don't renovate. Now it's a consideration. So I guess that does change things too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, renovating is a big pain in the butt for anyone that's done
sure.
it.
You know, because you have to live there.
Including myself.
Yeah.
but you know, if the alternative is trying to move to another place, and your mortgage payments are going to go up by 50, 60, 70%.
Yeah,
you know, suddenly the pain in the butt of renovating doesn't look so bad.
Yeah, true that. Okay, so what are some tips for people that are considering a move in 2017?
Well, if you're on the buying side, we definitely encourage buyers to have all their ducks in a row when it comes to making an offer.
Mm-hmm.
Get pre get pre-qualified for a mortgage, make a competitive offer. And that's because when inventory is low, which it is in many markets, there are a lot of buyers for relatively few homes, and so it's going to be very, very competitive. So again, we encourage buyers to keep their ducks in a row. Sellers, on the other hand, are going to be kind of in a catch-22 situation. It's going to be great as a seller, right, especially if prices, have risen, and you've got good equity.
Right.
But again, you're going to also have to be on the buying side.
Right.
And, that can make it difficult, when finding a new home. Suddenly you have a buyer for your house. It's a hot commodity, but it's going to be tough to find another one. So we really encourage both buyers and sellers to really think ahead and think strategically about how they're going to make that transition.
I know two kinds of people, Ralph. I know the kind of people that live in their house and then it starts falling apart around them. They don't care. They're living in it. And then there's the other people I know who are constantly thinking, if I sold tomorrow, would I have to do this? They keep their house up. They make sure everything is looking good all the time. Nothing's deteriorating. Which is better? I mean, it's not comfortable to live like people are going to come look at your home every day.
Yeah. Certainly there is a premium to be paid for a house that is move-in ready.
Yeah.
If your house isn't move-in ready, you could probably sell it. Inventory is short, but you're going to take a hit. And not just a hit because it's not move-in ready, but you're going to take a hit because you're also not providing the value added of making sure it's move-in ready, right?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to figure out if you put the money into making it move-in ready as opposed to selling it short and making them pay for move-in ready, then is it apples to apples, or is it going to cost me more one way than the other?
It certainly is going to cost a seller a little bit more money if their house is not move-in ready,
because
it requires more work on the buyer.
Right, and there's also psychology to that, too. I guess if someone sees a beautiful home move-in ready, they're going to pay that much more anyway.
You're exactly right, and you're going to have fewer people interested in making offers if the house isn't move-in ready.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, we could talk all day because there's a lot to talk about here, but we're not allowed to. So I would assume that I would go to Trulia.com, TRULIA.com, which people I think do anyway, but there you can get all the tips and ideas that we've been talking about and see what's going on in your neighborhood. And by the way, may I say, not to speak for you, that every once in a while it's kind of cool, fun, and smart to go to Trulia.com and see what houses in your neighborhood are going for and just get a feel for where you stand in the world. And it's kind of it's interesting. It's something you should keep up on anyway, I think. Thank you, sir.
Yep, thank you much, Ron.
Okay, Ralph, bye-bye.
Bye.
Interesting stuff, man, interesting stuff. Did you know that Christmas is just around the corner, and so is Hanukkah? How many hundreds of times have you heard this song today? It's not over yet. Day is young, or it's old, and the day's older. I celebrate Christmas even though I'm not of the Christmas faith, because Hanukkah is a fine holiday as well, but you get, like, I think it's like 8 gifts, like one gift every day for eight years or for 8 days or something. And I always remember that when my friends used to open up their gifts on Christmas morning, they used to get these big remote control trucks and big toys. And I would open my present on the seventh day, and it would be a dreidel, which is like a plastic spinning top that's no bigger than the size of your thumb. And I would have some great regrets, and I acted them out by being violent. I didn't. I'm only kidding. I didn't act them out by being violent. I was violent. I acted them out by being violent. I put on heels and put a dress on, and I said, my name is Violet. Oh, God. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace. We're all going to need it.